Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 So today we'll discuss from, of course, from the point of Muhyanti Yat Suryaha, by whom the suras, or demigods, are bewildered. Of course, all these points are interrelated. They're all different, irreducible, inseparable facets of the Supreme Truth, Personality of Godhead. But nevertheless, we'll analyze them one by one. Different characteristics. Just like water has so many properties which are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. One property is that it dissolves other liquids, solids, and even gases. That's one property. Another property is that it is the vehicle by which the sensation is made possible. If you've ever taken very dry food on a very dry throat, then it's taste of water is needed. Immediately the body provides some water. There are other properties of water. It thins. If you have water, then it will thin a thicker solution. Modern science has analyzed that water at standard pressure, pure water, will freeze at 0 degrees Celsius and boil at 100 degrees Celsius. So these are all properties of water. And it's not that there's some water has some of these properties and other water doesn't have any of these properties. They're all part of the entity called water. Water is definable by these characteristics. So in the same way, these characteristics of the Supreme Truth, they're always existing simultaneously with Him. Therefore, they are non-different from Him. There's no Bhagavan without these characteristics. And only Bhagavan possesses these characteristics. They're all interrelated. That he is a person in a completely different category from others, which is apparent from what has been already related, means that he bewilders even the demigods. Mohyanti yat suryaha, by whom, or about whom, sorry. It's by whom and about whom. The great sages and demigods are illusions. So let's, anyway, even though all these characteristics are completely interrelated, we can still examine them one by one to appreciate them better. It's our examination is not like that of a biologist examining worms. But our method of examination is in a very humble mood, feeling ourselves very much incapable, very grateful to Vyasadeva and his representatives that they have given us this knowledge by which we can better appreciate the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and having acquired this knowledge, then the only conclusion is that we have to surrender to Krishna and serve Him. That's the natural outcome of this knowledge, acquiring this knowledge. Generally, people acquire knowledge of other persons, and they become skeptical about those persons. If someone's writing a biography, they find out all the dirt beneath them. That's what makes a biography all the more fun. The public image is, underneath the public image, what is the real ex-Mr. So-and-so? What is he really like? He has a good public image. What's he like underneath? All the dirt is brought out. Interestingly, in writing Srila Prabhupada's biography, there's no dirt. There's no public life and private life. It's all the same. That's the Vaishnava, inside and outside the same. Of course, there are some things which are not made public. I mean, there are some certain dealings in Bombay which were illegal. So that's not revealed, just for the sake of people who may misunderstand that. But actually, it's spotless character. So in examining the character of Bhagavan, the character and the characteristics, the more we examine, the more we realize how wonderful is He. And if we are hearing as devotees, this Bhagavatam is meant for devotees, then the spirit of service to Bhagavan, the spirit of faith in Bhagavan is nourished more and more and more, so that we simply want to go on serving Him more and more. We take more and more pleasure. Vayam tu na vitripyama uttama shloka vikrame yach chinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. What's the translation, Nakshatri? Can you tell us? I can see you repeating that verse with me. We are not vayam, we have heard from you. Shonak Rishi, speaking on behalf of the other 59,999 or so Rishis at Naimisharanya, said to Sudra Goswami that this is great, this is wonderful. You're telling us about Krishna and bhakti and it's wonderful. But we're not satisfied. We're not fully satisfied. We're satisfied, but we're not fully satisfied, because the more we hear, the more we want to hear. So it becomes impossible. You cannot. The devotee is always satisfied. Krishna bhakta nishkama te vishanta. He's always satisfied. But another way, he's always dissatisfied. He always wants more, more, more. Let us hear more and more. So let us hear today about how Krishna bewilders even the demigods. Now remember that this Srimad Bhagavatam, this is Vyasadeva's final contribution. He's compiled all the Vedas, and under his direction various Puranas have been compiled. The Upanishads have been written down. Vedanta Sutra, all of this. Now in the Vedas, various demigods are praised as supreme in various places. And according to certain theories of modern Indologists, Vishnu is a later god. And in the earlier Vedic canon, C-A-N-O-N, not canon, the kind of canon that's popular in the Balkans, in the Vedic canon, Varuna, Indra, Agni, they appear to be the prominent gods. And Vishnu comes up later, and according to their theory that, anyway, Krishna was a village folk god who got identified with Vishnu. Actually, canon would be very good for these people. Just, it's actually amazing how Krishna's, like Manidhar Prabhu was saying this morning, how Maya works. You see, it's not just, you know, the woman chasing after her dog, but it's the how Krishna's Maya bewilders even big scholars. Actually, in many ways, very intelligent people. But their intelligence is so bewildered that they can't find what all the Vedas are speaking of surrender to Krishna. They can't find it at all. And they'll never, ever be able to find it. They could speculate. If you give them a task, okay, you have to find out 1,000 interpretations by your own brain power of the Vedic knowledge, they would never find out surrender to Krishna. Or even if they did, they would just say it's another theory. Because their intelligence is bewildered. So the demigods, yeah, here, even the demigods, their intelligence is bewildered by the power of the Maya of Vishnu. Now, the demigods, they're very great persons. This is not to denigrate them, but rather it points out the greatness and the unique, insuperable position of Lord Vishnu. He is Asamardhava. No one is equal to him. No one is above him. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita in which Lord Krishna says the same thing. What is that verse? Just two lines, actually. Even less than two lines. Come on. It's a well-known verse. Matah parataram nanyat kinchidasti. That's the statement. There is nothing superior to me. Not even... Actually, the first line is, that's enough. Matah parataram nanya. Nothing is superior to me. And then just to emphasize it, kinchidasti, not even slightly, Krishna is supreme. The demigods, they're not supreme. But they are very important people in the material world. Demigods are... very highly elevated persons. We just said, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaviye. The Adi Kavi, the original philosopher, or the original Brahmin. Kavi can also mean one who knows Sanskrit. The original, Lord Brahma is a very important person. Now we find sometimes in our, it's interesting in the different Vaishnava sampradayas, the different attitudes towards the demigods. The Madhva sampradaya seems to be almost polytheistic. They seem to, well, they do, they worship demigods. Of course, philosophically, they're very clear that Krishna is supreme. I don't know if it's a modern innovation, but in Udupi, the headquarters of the Madhva sampradaya, it's quite common for them to dress Krishna in various dresses of demigods. Durga, you'll find him dressed. In Puri also, once a year, they dress Jagannath as Ganapati. On the other hand, the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they're so much against demigod worship that they, for an initiated devotee, one of the rules is, I don't know if they still follow it, I doubt it. One of the rules is that you should never enter a temple of a demigod even to save yourself from a tiger. That means if a tiger is chasing you and you come to a demigod temple, you'd rather get eaten by the tiger. It's pretty severe. They say we're fanatics. The Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is... It doesn't take either of these approaches. Neither do we regularly worship demigods, nor do we take such an extreme position as to totally reject offering any respect to them. But they are seen as representatives of Lord Vishnu within this world. Ah, yeah, I wanted to quote the Gauriya Vaishnava Acharya, Prabodhananda Saraswati. He says that, Vidhi Mahindra Dishchakitayate. For one who has got even a slight glance of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then Brahma, Indra, and so on, all the other demigods, they seem about as important as worms. That is Prabodhananda Saraswati's conclusion. Of course, everything he says is like that. He says, I'd rather be bitten by worms eternally in hell than step even one step out of Vrindavan, even for a moment. Or even if all the inhabitants of Vrindavan speak nonsense to me all the time, I'll still stay in Vrindavan, better than going outside Vrindavan and people speak to me Krishna Katha. So he takes a very strong position. But that, it is a glorification of Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service, in which it's not actually, sometimes this might seem like it's denigrating the demigods. You say, oh, they're just worms. But actually it shows how important the demigods are, because that bhakti is so great that in the eyes of a pure devotee, the position of demigods, it doesn't say that, the position of demigods is no more relishable than that of a worm. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the same thing. Kita janma hau jata tu adas. Bahimukta brahma janme nahi mor ash. He says that, I'd rather be born as a worm, if I can be your devotee, than be born as a Brahma and not be your devotee. So it's by saying the demigods, they're like worms, it shows that they're actually in the social scale completely at the opposite end to worms. They are the topmost in the social scale of the universe. They are in the topmost position. And Madhva, in his system, respects them so much because they are servants of Bhagavan within this world. They are his servants. Vishnu, what is that? What is that verse? Dvo bhuto sargo lokesmin daiva asura evacha. Vishnu bhakta smito daiva asura stad viparya. There are two kinds of people in this world. They're known as devas and asuras, or suras and asuras, demigods and demons. So the demigods, who are they? They are the devotees of Vishnu. And the demons, they have just the opposite outlook. So the demigods are very great persons, no doubt. But it is a mistake to consider them as independently powerful. That it may seem, if we read the descriptions in the Shastra, it may seem that Vishnu, if we're not guided in our understanding of Shastra, it may seem that Vishnu is just one of the gods, or that some of the demigods are even more powerful than he. It may seem like that because for his Leela, Lord Vishnu, he often accepts an inferior position to that of the demigods. A cowherd boy in Vrindavan is socially inferior to even the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas on the earth. What to speak of the demigods in heaven? When Lord Vishnu came as Vamanadev, he appeared as the younger brother of Indra, and therefore he is known as Indranuj. When he appeared as Lord Ramachandra, he worshipped Lord Shiva, as is famously quoted by Shaivites who want to cite this as evidence that Lord Rama, Vishnu, is inferior to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is superior. So it may appear like that. But here in the topmost Shastra, Vyasadeva's final contribution in his maturity, Srila Prabhupada makes this point in his translation of the second verse, that Vyasadeva, when after being blessed by Narada as Amoghadrik, that your vision is spotless, Vyasadeva compiles this Srimad Bhagavatam and gave the Vedyam Vasavam Atravastu, this Vastu, this subject, this is the actual subject, this is the actual topic, this is the actual substance, subject and substance of the Vedas, of all knowledge. So, we may perceive, in Vedic culture, it may be perceived that there are many gods and Lord Vishnu is one of them, and even the demigods themselves might think like that. But that's just an example of the illusion that they are placed into by him, by his illusory energy. It is a mistake. It is not correct. If we are to receive actual knowledge of the Supreme Truth from the actual source, from the Bhagavata, there are two Bhagavatas, Ek Bhagavata Bharo, Bhagavata Shastra, our Bhagavat Bhakta Bhakti Rasa Patra. There are two kinds of Bhagavats. The main one, or the central one, the big one, is Srimad Bhagavat Shastra. Narottam Das also says that in any, well, he says simply Madhyastha Bhagavat Puran, that if there's just a, Madhyastha means a mediator, actually. If there's any discussion, then the, who will give the verdict? Srimad Bhagavatam gives the verdict. There may be discussions on various shastras, but the ultimate conclusion is to be given by the Bhagavad Puran. So this Bhagavad Shastra, that is central, and then there are the Bhaktas who are the devotees, who are the receptacles. They're living within that bhakti. That bhakti rasa infuses their whole beings. They are also Bhagavat. Bhagavat means in relation to Bhagavan. So the devotees, they are living in the bliss of bhakti ras, which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, not only described, but which is inherent to Srimad Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam is Krishna. Bhagavat is, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of rasa. It's not just a theoretical description of rasa, but actually it is raso vai saha. It is composed of rasa. Srimad Bhagavatam is composed of rasa. And although we say there's philosophy and rasa, actually in perfection there's no difference between the two. Advayagya, this is described, this Vedanti tat. What is that? Vedanti tat tatva viras tatvam yajnanam advayam. This tatva, or this knowledge, it is of the Supreme, it is one principle. So, philosophy and rasa, we may think that they are, we may consider, we may categorize them as separate, but actually, in perfection, they come to the same thing, because perfection is Krishna. And he is raso vai saha, and he is vedyam vastu matra vastu. He is knowledge and the object of knowledge. Vedaishta savairaham eva vedyaha. So he is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and he is an, actually this, yesterday we were reading the Shankaracharya's conclusion, gyatri, gyata, and gyaya. They are all one, which is true in the case of Krishna. He is knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower. But then, if Krishna, he's also replete with his multiple energies. So it's not that every knower and every knowledge are all the same. That's true with Krishna. So the demigods, they themselves may be bewildered about this. They're servants of Krishna. They are generally succumbed. They have material desires. They're given some job in managing the universe. And the tendency to think, I am the boss. I am great. That may arise in their personality, and they may have that position because they desire that also. They're very pious persons. But at the same time, there's some admixture of the illusion in their consciousness. So he illusions them. They have knowledge of him, but at the same time that knowledge, they don't, it may be that they don't always fully realize it due to their material attachments. You'll find in the Bhagavatam in various places prayers by the demigods, very beautiful prayers to Lord Vishnu, very beautiful and very meaningful. If they weren't meaningful, they wouldn't be in the Bhagavatam. So the demigods, they recite these prayers, but it appears that they may not all of them will have full realization of that because of their material attachments. So they're very special persons, but even they themselves being so special from our perspective, or from the general perspective, even they are illusioned by this Supreme Lord. So that also establishes what is the greatness of Srimad Bhagavatam, because this Bhagavatam is going to present knowledge which even the demigods are bewildered about. There are two perspectives, the demigods, two perspectives. One perspective is they're very great, respectable, worshipable persons. And from another perspective, Vidhi Mahendra Adishchakyutayate, that they're like worms. That means that we respect their position, but a pure devotee, he doesn't consider their position any more desirable than that of a worm. Because for him, no material position is desirable or undesirable. He simply desires to serve Krishna. That is the point. The point is not to, as I'm saying again and again, not to denigrate the demigods, but to understand that they are very great, but however great their position may be, the position of even a very humble Vaishnava is humble, I'm using in the sense here of not materially exalted, is far greater than that of a demigod. This morning, Manida Prabhu in the class was mentioning Sudama Vipra, who was famous for being very poor. So, he is more dear to Krishna than even the great demigods because of his pure devotion to Krishna. We find also in Bhagavatam how there are many examples. When Lord Krishna, he journeyed to Mithila, there are two very great devotees of his there within the city. One was the king. What was his name? Bahulashra, that's right. And there was a very poor Brahmin also, whose name was, don't tell me. Alright, Shukri. So Lord Krishna divided himself into two four. He didn't divide himself, but he manifested himself. It's very difficult to find the language to describe Lord Krishna, actually, because what he does is beyond ordinary language, or beyond ordinary understanding. So he manifested two non-different forms, and one went to stay with the king, Mahalashtra, who was very opulently and royally served, and the other form went to the house of Shutadev, where he had just nothing to offer the Lord, but the Lord was equally happy to visit both of them because he valued their devotion. He didn't, even the opulence that was offered, the opulent welcome that was offered him by Bahulashtra was not going to be very impressive with what he had in Dwarka. So Krishna is partial to his devotees. Bhakti, the value of bhakti, this Vipra, Sudama, he also said, see, I was embraced, he embraced me. Who am I? I'm just a poor Brahmana. But he embraced me with his own arms. So we find this again and again in the, it's the crux or the essential point of bhakti that is repeated. We find again and again in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the, it is the book of bhakti, because it is the book about Bhagavan. And Bhagavan is concerned with bhakti. He's not so much concerned with opulence or jewels, but he's concerned with his devotees. So we'll find this point again and again. It's manifest in all the narrations through Bhagavatam that how great is Bhagavan and how great his greatest quality is his bhakta vatsalya, his affection or his mercy toward his devotees, that even though the devotees, Krishna doesn't see the material position of the devotees. It doesn't matter whether they're a king or a PhD or whatever they may be. Krishna wants to see the devotion. He's satisfied with patrang, pushpam, phalam, toyam, leaf, flower, fruit, water, if it's offered with devotion. But there's a famous story. When we say story, it's not a fairy story, narration, we can say, of Lord Krishna refusing to eat refusing the invitation of Duryodhana, royal invitation. He refused to go. No, I don't eat you. I don't like you. You don't like my devotees? I don't like you. And then he visited the hut of Vidur, and Vidur's wife, seeing him come, was so much happy, she wanted to offer him something to eat, she only had bananas in her. So in ecstasy, she was peeling the bananas and giving them to Krishna, but in ecstasy, she got a little mixed up, so she was throwing away the banana and giving Krishna the skin. But Krishna ate it anyway, because it's given with devotion, how can I refuse? So this is a famous anecdote of how Krishna, even though he is so great, so powerful, so opulent, and we are totally dependent upon him in every way. That's, the whole universe is totally dependent upon him. That's described in the narration of the Purusha Sukta, that all the ingredients of the universe may be there, everything is there, but until the Supreme Lord enters, there's no life. He is Jagajiva. He is the life of the universe, literally. He is the life of all lives. Even though we're totally dependent upon him, totally inferior to him, infinitely great, and we are infinitesimally small, but still he extends himself to his devotees and treats them as if they were his very dear friends, which they are. He makes himself subordinate to his devotees. This is a great mystery of the Bhagavatam. Here we have the word Swarat. He is independent. That is a defining characteristic of the Supreme Personality of God, that he is independent. And again, later on in Bhagavatam, in the ninth canto, we'll find Aham Bhakta Paradhino Nahi Swatantra Ivadvija. He tells Durvasa Muni, a great Brahmin, this Go Brahmana Hitayachara, the great well-wisher of the Brahmanas, tells this Brahmin that I am dependent upon my devotees, I am not independent. So he is independent, but he is at the same time totally dependent. Yesterday we were reading Jiva Goswami's analysis, in which all contradictions are resolved in him. So he is, by his very characteristic as Bhagawan, he is independent. But apart from being Bhagawan, he is also, of course, he is Bhagawan and he is Krishna. Krishna is Bhagawan, he's not Bhagawan and Krishna. But apart from the dum-dum, the razzmatazz. Do you have any word like that? Razzmatazz. The du-du-du-du-du-du of being Bhagavan. I can translate that into that word. You can just say it in Croatian. Du-du-du-du-du-du. Apart from the what's an easy word? Fanfare, that's the right word. Apart from the fanfare of being Bhagawan, he's also a person. And he's the original person, and contrary to what all the skeptics and impersonalists, etc., Satanists, and everyone else would say, God is love. Love is what it's all about. He's the original lover. So, apart from being the one who, simply by his desire, tava ichchamata, Vishnu Koren Pala, this Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis, by your wish, Lord Vishnu maintains the universe, Brahma creates it, Shiva destroys it, just by his wish. He's lying down and Lakshmi is massaging his feet and the whole universe is going on and he's just taking a break or lying down on Anantashesh. Nothing to do. Lakshmi is feeding, giving him pan and all these kind of things. So apart from being the fully independent Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's also this supreme loving person. So this paradox is, we find this again and again, the supremely powerful Nrsimhadev rips apart the unconquerable, invincible Hiranyakashipu, or even the demigods are afraid of, and even the demigods are afraid of Lord Nrsimhadev, and he pats Prahlad on the head. Very nice boy. And all the demigods, they're all shivering. In fear, they're afraid. Even Lakshmi's afraid. So like this, again and again and again, we see Durvasa Muni was a much greater person than Ambarish Maharaj, it appears. But Lord Vishnu, he said, I can't forgive you. It's, you know, I'm a sentimental person, and my heart doesn't allow me to forgive you. Sadhava hridayo mahyam sadhunam hridayam tvaham madanyate na jananti naham teva managapi. The devotees are my heart. You want to do an x-ray, see what's there? My devotees are my heart. And I am, because they have captured me in their heart, they don't know anything but me, and therefore I don't know anything but them. So, sorry, I know I told you I was the well-wisher of the Brahmanas, but in this case, sorry, I'm incapable of forgiving you. Cannot forgive you. I'm dependent upon my devotees.
If he says, you go to Ambarish Maharaj. If he agrees, if he forgives you, I forgive you. That's all. I'm not independent in this matter. You have to go to the higher authority. So I came to the higher, I went all over the universe, I came to the highest authority. And he said, you go back to the beginning. Go back to where you made the mistake. So even great demigods, so powerful, so great, and they're bewildered by him. And here also, Muhyanti yat Suryaha, here Srila Prabhupada translates Suryaha as great sages and demigods. It's in the word-by-word translation. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. Even great sages, even persons who are very learned in Vedic knowledge, very serious about understanding Vedic knowledge, very austere, very renounced, very much concerned to get out of the misery of this material world, they can be totally bewildered and illusioned, as we were reading yesterday from Vivek Churamani. Of course, Shankaracharya himself is a great devotee of Krishna, but in his sampradaya there are so many persons who are very highly learned, and you can meet today. I mean, not on every street corner, but you can meet Shankaracharyas in the sampradaya. They're still going on. I've met two of them in the course. I mean, I don't go around looking for them, and they certainly don't go around looking for me. But in the course of my travels around India, Sringeri Mutt, I met the Shankaracharya there, the incumbent Shankaracharya. And then last year in Puri, the Puri Shankaracharya. So they are venerable persons, steeped in Vedic knowledge, no doubt. Real sannyasis, concerned with maintaining what they call Hindu Dharma. Highly respected, very learned, in Shastra, very committed to the traditional way of life, pious, very austere, and then they find their sannyas rules are very strict. But philosophically, they got it completely wrong. The culture, everything they got right, they know the Vedic. He got it wrong, so many sages, Karad, Gautam, Patanjali, Vashishta, the Ashtavakra, there are so many names of famous munis and sages in the Vedic knowledge, but they also, most of them didn't get it, they missed the point. They're bewildered by this Bahiranga Shakti, external, they think they got to the point. They're thinking that they understood. To them, everything seems clear. That is Vishnu Maya. Everything seems clear. They think they got it all worked out. This Vishnu Maya works even on great city. It works on the cats and the dogs and the worms. It works on people who are avidusha, who are unknowledgeable or not wise. Actually, that term is used to describe the persons who saw Krishna in the wrestling arena of Kamsa. So they saw Krishna and they thought, oh, here is the universal form. So they had some idea that this is not an ordinary person. But their perception of him was that he's the universal form. The universal form has come in this small form. So anyway, we can talk about this more tomorrow. How are they bewildered? that is described in the next few words. What's the time? Does anybody watch? 11:45, okay. So I wonder, should I go on to the next point? Yeah, even the great sages are bewildered. So this is also a warning. There's so many points we can extract from all these statements. It's a warning to us. If even the great demigods and even great sages are bewildered by Vishnu Maya, then what to speak of us? If we take this knowledge, Srimad Bhagavatam, from the pure devotees, Srila Prabhupada has presented this knowledge in an extraordinary manner. I mean, it's forget all these Pulitzer prizes and all these prizes they give for literature. I mean, Prabhupada's contribution is unique in a language which is actually totally unequipped for expressing transcendence, namely English, and I'm sure Croatian is not much better. He has made clear all these various concepts. We say concepts, again it's a useless language, we say concepts. The word concept in itself is a useless term, but what else are we going to say? It's actually reality. The word concept gives it, there's this idea that in Western philosophy that everything is simply a mental concept. It's not a concept, it's reality. Yeah, there are many different there's an idea, it was actually promoted by this bishop in Berkeley from England, who's a bishop in the church, that of course he wasn't the first, but he gave this idea that everything, there's no actual substance, it's just everything is just all in the mind, everything is just a mental concept. And so it's quite common, you probably meet when you're preaching here in the West, you meet people and then they say, well, I think good and bad, these are just different mental concepts. In other words, there's no difference between good and bad, so I can just do whatever I like. It all comes down, all these so-called high-sounding philosophies, it all comes down to, I could put it in a very gross way, sex. Inserting a part of one body into part of another body. And that's what it all comes down to, sense gratification. Big philosopher, I think this, I think that. It all comes down to sense gratification. Even for the demigods. Why can't they understand Krishna as he is? Because of attachment to sex. The feeling or the attachment to the, this is a concept. This is a concept. It's not to the concept that my best interest is better served by engaging in sex than surrendering to Krishna. This is a concept. Shruti Sukha, Prahlad Maharaj calls it. It's something we hear about. If you do this, you will be happy. But it's only heard about, it's only a concept, there's no substance, there's no reality there. It's just an idea. It's the chasing after the dog's tail of the philosophers and everyone else. In this sense, the philosophers are no different from the worms and the rats and the dogs. They're chasing after the dog's tail of sense gratification. They'll never catch it. And even if theoretically they could catch it, it was completely meaningless anyway. When, if the dog was ever to catch his tail, how would it benefit the dog? So it's a completely useless search. They're searching after something useless and they can't even get it anyway. And when it's put clearly, then it's... Yes, that's true. And then immediately... Go for sense gratification. This is mine. Even the demigods are bewildered. This So it's a call by saying that even the demigods are bewildered. It's a call to that if we are to understand this Bhagavata Shastra, if we're actually going to enter into Bhagavata Bhakti, then we have to go beyond this illusion, which is not possible by ourselves, simply by our own efforts. We should know, just like we're discussing the characteristics of Bhagavan, we should know what are the characteristics of Bhagavan's Bahiranga Shakti, his bewildering external potency. We should know, so that we can become free from that. Otherwise, we'll remain bewildered, like the demigods. They're devotees, but they're bewildered. They don't understand Krishna fully. Yes, they understand. They can speak nice verses. But after speaking the nice verses, they'll go back to their various heavenly planets and go on dancing with Apsaras, etc. There's only Devarshi Narada. He is the Rishi among the Devas. Narada, who gives Narayana. It's the meaning of the name Narada. But who wants to take? Who will cross beyond that illusion? So in this first verse of Bhagavatam, there it is, as stated here about Lord Vishnu himself, anvayat itaratha, directly and indirectly. He is conscious of everything. So directly and indirectly, this first verse of Bhagavatam contains everything in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Directly and indirectly, everything is there. So it's very important to understand this first verse, especially the first three verses of Bhagavatam. If we discuss it more, if we discuss these more and more and more, then our appreciation of the rest of Bhagavatam is of Krishna, because Krishna is the subject of the Bhagavatam, he is the Bhagavatam. That will increase also more and more and more. So are there any questions, please, about this? Yes, please. Difference between Madhvas and Gaurya Vaishnavas, there are many. Why are we called the Madhva Gaurya Vaishnava Sampradaya? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted initiation he accepted his Vaishnava initiation in the line of the Madhva Sampradaya. And the later acharyas have said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu identified himself with the Madhva Sampradaya specifically because of Madhva's unrelenting and total destruction of Mayavad. He particularly appreciated that. Write a book about it. Research. Write a book. There has been that. OBL Kapoor, his philosophy and religion of Sri Chaitanya. That's a good introduction. These points are discussed. The differences between the Madhva Sampradaya and the Gaurya Sampradaya. We speak of the Gaurya Sampradaya as a separate. And for all intents and purposes, it functions as a separate Sampradaya. So that book by OBL Kapoor, the philosophy and religion of Sri Chaitanya, gives a good overview. And then if you want to get into more detail, then you have to do more research. What are the samenesses? What are the differences? What's the word for samenesses? Anyway, you can understand what I mean.
Common points.
Similarity is a little different. The similarities is also, similarities.
Guru Maharaj, I heard that some acharyas
all of the ten offenses of the holy name. Also, we should not be disrespectful to the demigods.
We should not be disrespectful to the demigods.
So, in our due course of preaching, in which sense?
Well, that's definitely stated there in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion.
So
neither do we regularly worship the demigods. We can worship them, but not regularly. Worship means, in India we may be passing some temple of Durga or Shiva. We may deliberately go and visit it. If we go to there's important temples of Lord Shiva, and if we, just like, it was last September or something, I went to Ujjain for the first time. And that's a famous temple of Lord Shiva. So we went to visit it. And when we visited, we recited the prayer from Brahma Samhita, glorifying Lord Shiva as a great devotee of Govinda. What's that verse? Come on. Anyone? Shiram yatha dadi vikara vishesha yogat sanjayate na hitata pritagasti heto yah shambhutama pitata samupaiti karyat govindamadi purusham tamaham rajami. Please learn these basic shlokas. I mean, you've learned, but I know it's after breakfast. But of course, it's one thing about preaching in the West is that you're just trying to give people some prasadam. That's about as far as it goes usually. Preaching in India means you have to get loaded up with slogans. But it's for our own sadhana also. To understand this philosophy and enter into it means we should learn slogans. That is one advantage of living in India, is that we have to, I mean, it's part of our preaching, we have to quote slokas all the time. But it is important to know these verses. Those of you who are doing deity worship should recite this. Do you recite this daily? No? What do you recite? Sri Sukta? Oh, okay. The Brahma Samhita, this fifth chapter, it's important to recite this because it is the, within this fifth chapter, there's the summary of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, all the philosophical points of the Bhagavatam, right there. And not in the whole fifth chapter, but in the Govindamadi Purusham. Verse 29 up to whatever it is, Shri Akanta Akanta. There's a complete overview of the points of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So if we're going past the Shiva temple, we will go in and we'll recite this. We'll bow down to Lord Shiva. But we're not, it's not part of our daily ritual to worship Lord Shiva. It could be, if you're living in Ujjain and you're close to that temple, you might go daily and offer obeisances. Lord Shiva is our guru. So we should go daily, we should offer obeisances to the guru. But we won't. The point is that our attention is on Krishna. We don't want to get diverted to worship of so many different demigods. And also the understanding how we worship is very different from the priests in the temple. How they're worshipping and our attitude in worshipping is something quite different. Yeah, so, what is this?
In which sense we can be then disrespectful? How that we can avoid
What constitutes disrespect to demigods? Yeah, to criticize them. No, but we don't say that. We don't disrespect the demigods. We may point out that they are can be illusioned by Vishnu Maya. That's simply pointing out a fact. That's a philosophical point. Well, that's Madhva. He didn't touch the Brahma Vimohana Lila. The Brahma being illusion. Stealing the coward boys. He didn't comment on it. Because it's presumed that because he's our guru. So we won't discuss it. But we do discuss it. In our sangha. We do discuss it. Not in an attitude of disrespect to Lord Brahma, but as that Lord Vishnu has arranged this Leela to, for various reasons, to, or Yoga Maya, oh, there's a, okay. So, Lord Vishnu has to nourish his pastimes and to demonstrate. We're Muhyanti Yat Surya. I mean, there are examples right there in the Bhagavatam how Indra is bewildered, Brahma is bewildered, and even Lord Shiva is bewildered by the power of Lord Vishnu. So it brings out the greatness of Lord Vishnu. We discuss this not in a manner of blaming Lord Brahma or saying, look, he's completely new. He's such a great person that even he was bewildered. So how great is Lord Vishnu? In this moment, we have to be very careful when we're discussing. All right, so we'll finish there. All glories to the demigods for their worship of Lord Vishnu. Please forgive me for any offenses that I have inadvertently made toward you, and please bless me with bhakti to Lord Vishnu, to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam.